Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 22.
On the other tape, I told you about the Burgomaster, or Lord Mayor, how I used to flog a tin of cocoa or something like that to him from our chaps. Well, he told me, of course, in the beginning, that he badly needed it for his widowed mother. So, of course, that didn't make any difference to us. But later on, one of his clerks told me when I was talking to him, he'd got no widowed mother, no more than I got a widowed granddad. What he was doing with it, he was sending it to an high-class hotel in Berlin. Now, what the hell he got for that, I don't know, because he gave us 10 marks for a tin. Well, of course, that was only a few coppers in England then. But anyway, that's what he was doing with it. Well, now I'll wander on. We've came now into the spring of 1918. Now, at that time, if you look back through your history books, you'll see that there was a revolution in Russia in October 1917. Well, now, the whole of us prisoners there, and there was Russians, of course, mainly, all that area was Russian prisoners of war. Now, all that lot and all that time, none of us ever heard of that revolution. The only answer is, of course, they killed the Tsar, the Queen, princes, princesses, they murdered the whole lot. Now, it's funny that the Germans never told us. The only answer I can think of was it was suppressed, because the Kaiser then was king, of course, of Germany, and eventually, towards the end of the war, there was, of course, a revolution in Germany, and the Kaiser, he abdicated and went to Holland, and eventually he died in Holland. Well, now, I'll wander on now to talk about the Russian. Just at that time, I'd got any amount of freedom. I could wander almost anywhere I liked in the village, as I told you. He gave me a written pass to do so. Well, it got into my head then, I'm going to make a break. Well, I had it over with our chaps, us Englishmen. We had it together and had it over with them, and I told them what I thought I was going to have a do. And I thought, well, the best thing I can do, of course, you had to break into Russia. No other way. You couldn't go across Germany. Those that did break out from the other side of Germany, they broke out and went the other way. They could get away with it there, but you couldn't. I'd got to go into Russia from this side. But anyway, I had a word with this Russian that I knew so well, so friendly with, and I thought, well, he is sure to have a do. And he was interpreter for the other Russians. And I had a word with him one day, and I asked him, I said, are you game to make a bolt for it into your country? I thought surely he'd say yes, but he said no. I said, oh, I thought, that's not too good. I said, well, why not? He said, in my case, he said, if I break out from here, he said, I've got to go the whole width of Russia to get to Siberia. He said, and I don't know how ever I can make it. But he said, what I will do, I've got one of our chaps, one of the Russians there, he's a bit of a mad head and a tough chap, he said, I think he'll go with you. He says, I'll have a word with him and see what he'll do. So he did, and he came back, he said, yes, he will. He said, he's a Ukrainian Jew. He said, he's game to go with you. And I tried to fix it up, we see our chaps. Well, in our parcels at that time, each parcel had a little bit of a little canister with pepper, my mustard and salt, just a little bit, about a teaspoonful of each. Well, our chaps, all the pepper they got, they put it in a bag, and we saved up all the pepper out of each parcel, all of us. And little bits of food, spare tin stuff, we ordered that up to make a break. And then I got in touch then with a chap in the village. Oh, before that, we got in touch with a friend, one of the French chaps. He was a tough old boy. Not old, he was young, much younger than me. But he was a Frenchman, and his job pre-war days, he worked in an hotel as a chef, learning the trade in the Savoy Hotel in London at that time, so he could speak a bit of English as well. Well, now then, there was him, this Ukrainian, and myself. We decided we'd do it, and we prepared all we could. There was a chap in the village that was a Pole, and he'd lived in that village practically all his life, because being a Pole, he wasn't called up in the German army, so he used to work in the village and knock about. Well, I got to know him. I knew him before we decided this, and I had a go with him and asked him if he would help us. I says, can you get me a map and a compass? He said, I'll do what I can. Well, he did. He got us a lovely map and a compass, and I said, can you get me a revolver? He said, I don't know, he said, but I'll find out. He tried for weeks and weeks, but he could never get me a revolver. And he told me, he said, well, that's the best I can do. There's a force car, you'll get a map. He said, you'll find all you want on that map. And it was a lovely map. Well, we used to sit together times, us three, with this map, and it was in detail, and we had the compass, and try to work out the course through. The idea was, later, what we was going to wait till the autumn, because God knows when the war would finish, we didn't, and we was going to wait till the autumn, till the corn was up, and then we was going to break out one Sunday. Early Sunday morning we was going. We could get away with it then, wander out, they used to let us out then later a little bit, and we'd worked it so we could get through into this forest, go so far through the forest, then break out and travel during the night in the dark. And that's the way we'd worked it all out. But on the map, now I can't remember the name of the river, but there was a river there which we knew the bridges would be guarded, and that was going to be our problem to get over. Well, we knew these bridges would be guarded. Well, what we got to decide then was the width of the river when we got to it, whether it'd be worth having a go at the sentries, or whether we'd swim the river, because both of them were good swimmers and I wasn't too bad. But anyway, we decided that we'd decide what to do when we reached that point. Well, now that went on. We got everything all prepared, but I'll tell you the outcome later. Now I'll drift on now to talk about Easter. It was Easter then, Easter 1918. Well, now the Germans used to treat Easter exactly the same as Christmas. They used to have the parties, sing songs. They used to have this so-called palm, or what they pull off the edges. They used to come in and wave that about and have a real party, just the same as if it was Christmas. And that also applied in Russia in peacetime. They used to keep up Easter, same as Christmas. Well, now that Russian that I was ever so pally with, and he said to me, just before Easter Sunday, He said, now, he said, there's, I've been invited. He was interpreter for everybody around that district. I've been invited to a farm some miles outside Domna. And he said, I've had a word with the postman to allow me to go to this big party at this farm, where all the, it was all big farms around that part. And he said, would you like to come? I said, yes, I would. So I went and saw Jerry and told him. He said, yeah, you can go with him. Well, on the Sunday we went, and I don't know whether 3 or 4 miles must have been, or perhaps more, we wandered across country to this farm. Well, when we got there, it was a big farm, and they'd got a great big barn there, and we went in, and there was full of all Russian prisoners of war. I should say there were 50 to 60. It was full crowd of these Russian prisoners, and evidently the farmers around that area had given permission to have a party, because they'd got eggs, and they'd got a bath there, and there was eggs, all hard-boiled eggs. I always remember it so well. Hard-boiled eggs, and they'd shelled them, all there ready to eat. Well, now, when we got there, they, some of them must have knew this Russian that I was with. I can't make out now whether he was officer or what, but he was smartly dressed when he kept his put his best clothes on before the other uniform, that prisoner's clobber. And they made a hell of a fuss of him. And, of course, at that time, you see, I'd got full military uniform, nice blue uniform, peaked cap, and yellow stripe down my trousers, and I really looked smart. Well, these Russian prisoners there, they were a scruffy old crowd, or scruffy old prisoner of war uniforms. And, oh, hell. He introduced me to them as an English soldier, which naturally was right. Blimey, they made a hell of a fuss. All they crowded round, shook hands, and all, blimey. I think, well, because I was the first Englishman they'd seen. And then later it started. And we was eating these eggs, dishing them round, hard-boiled eggs. Now, if there was one, there was 6 or 7 concertinas, you know, the old squeeze box. Well, that's a Russian custom. I think the kids, when the kids are born in Russia, instead of them giving them a dummy to suck, they give them one of these accordions to play. Well, now, there were 6 or 7 of those accordions there, and they started. Well, now, they'd bought or got out of a load of bottles of old-fashioned pop we used to have in England, ginger beer, you know, what you buy in the pubs and clubs. They'd got a lot of bottles of them they'd bought, but above all, they'd got a load of methylated spirits. Now, where they got, I don't know. I didn't ask. But they'd got this load of methylated spirits. Well, they started. After dinner, later in the afternoon, I started then singing, playing these, what do you call it, squeeze box things. I started all, and they started singing, dancing. Then they were dishing this stuff round, this ginger pop, as you call it, with a load of methylated spirits in it. Well, they kept saying to me, have some, have some. But I said, no, I didn't want it. I didn't want that stuff. But anyway, this Russian that was with me, he said, you better have a drop, he said. You must drink some, he said. If not, he said, they'll think you're on the other end, you know, up against them, he said. So for goodness sake, drink some of it. Well, they brought me a mug with this methylated spirits in. All hell. I sipped it, and when they weren't looking, I kept tipping a drop on the floor to get rid of it. But anyway, the singing and that carried on through the afternoon until I got a blooming cough all the time. Well, I was saying, that singing carried on. They kept knocking this methylated spirits back. And I was beginning to get really drunk. So much, some of them, I started to knock it back and they fell down, they were lying, spark out. And the others, they kept singing, dancing and playing these melodeons. And all at once, one of them, he jumped up, he was excited playing this melodeon, he pulled it all to bits, torn it all in strips, tore it to bits, another one done the same. In the excitement, and destroyed it, completely destroyed. Two of them did. And it carried on like that, and knocking this stuff back. So I said to this Russian that I was with, I began to get worried. I told him, I said, I think we better hop it. I said, it don't look too safe. He says, that's all right. He said, you leave it to me. I said, well, I don't like the idea. And the more they kept on shouting and singing, and they kept coming round me and him and pulling us about to dance. Hey, the hell, I couldn't do Russian dancing. Pulled us about, you know, in the excitement and that join in. So at the finish, I said to this Russian, I said, get us out quick. So he said, all right, leave it to me. Well, he saw one of them. I think he must have been one of the principal ones of these prisoners. Had him on one side and told him, you know, it'd be best for us to go. So he calmed them all down, this chap did. He told them, he said, well, our friends have got to get back, you know. And so that was all right, yeah. So they lined up, I've never seen anything like it in my life. They lined up two rows and... We had, I'll have another go, I'll keep coughing. Well, they lined up, made two long rows down the middle of this barn, and we walked down, this Russian and myself, we walked down, and do you know, as we walked down that row, they bowed down, just the same as if we were royalty. I never see anything like it in my life. They bowed down till we got to the end, and then we just waved to them as we went out the door, and they cheered and hollered, and as we went across the field outside, they hollered like hell and screamed and waved their hand at us. Now they were just, well, I don't know, they were just like slaves cheering somebody. I never forgot that. They all bowed down as we went out. Well, there are many experiences which I could tell you, but I'll try and find what I think would be the most amusing. There was one occasion which I spent a few weeks working on a farm. Now, the farmer used to come in each day and pick up so many prisoners. And I think there was about six Russians and myself. I was the only Englishman. And they took us out onto this farm. And it wasn't a bad job at all. It was haymaking and so forth. Now this old farmer, oh, by the way, there was four or five girls from the village as well. There's these girls, these Russians and myself. When I went to this farm, well, now the old farmer, me being the only Englishman, he sort of singled me out for, well, I don't know, not preferential treatment, I couldn't say that, but out of curiosity perhaps. Now he used to like a drink, and he had his old horse and cart, and he used to get me to drive him back into the village to the village pub. Now that was very amusing, because he'd go in there and sit there perhaps for a couple hours or more and keep knocking them back, and he always used to get me a drink at the same time. I had a drink with him, but the strange thing was, when we went back, when he'd finished, and to go back to the farm, the old lad, he never paid a penny for drink. He used to book it all down and then send the bill in. Well, I never knew anything like that before. He wasn't a bad old stick, but he had a son that was in the army, and he was officer in the army, and he came home on leave. Well, he didn't take at all kindly to me, but anyway, while he was there, I remember he had a clean up, cleaned all his buckles and things, polished them all up, and he set them out all in a row on some railings outside the house, on some railings, and all his equipment there, he cleaned it and hung it all there to dry and freshen up. And so I saw this buckle. That's a buckle that they wear on in the belt. It's rather a square buckle. And I saw that shone beautiful. So I thought, here you go. So I pinched it. I thought, well, I'll have that for a keepsake. Well, I took it, and as a matter of fact, I've got it at home now in the drawer. And it's a square sort of a buckle, and stamped around it in writing is Gott mit uns, or in English, God with us. And I pinched that, and what happened, I don't know. He never found it. I took it back to the lager and hid it in my box, but I never heard no more about it. But I bet he got an hell of a row for losing it, and he didn't like me, and I didn't like him. And now these gals, when we was out there, I pulled a handkerchief out of my pocket, and it was one, of course, I had in my parcels, handkerchiefs and all that, socks and so forth, and it was a large, what they sent us was very, very large handkerchiefs. You could almost say half the size of a tablecloth, great big ones, and it was red with white spots. Well, I pulled this out of my pocket, and one of these gals, oh, she said, what lovely linen. I said, yeah. She says, could you get me one? I said, no. But anyway, out of curiosity, I said, next day when we went to work, I'd got a new one in me box, and got it out. I'll give this gal that handkerchief. And oh, blimey, every time after that, she used to wear it on her head, like a boatie. You know, put this over her, and all the other gals, they envied her, and would I give them one? I said, no, I couldn't give them all, but I'll give this gal one. Oh, blimey, wasn't she proud of that? I wish I'd get rid of this cough. When I finished with the farm job, I had one of the best jobs that I ever had whilst I was there, and that was at a man in the village done shoe repairing, and he carried on with that and had a large contract with the German army to repair army shoes, stiefels, or jack boots as you call them. Well, now, he used to have those come in sackfuls, loads of them. Well, now, he had a large room set apart for repairing them. Well, there was about 8 Russians working there repairing these shoes, and the postman he sent myself and another Frenchman. Now, I'll tell you a lot about that Frenchman eventually. He was his name Juan Dumas, and his home was Lille. in France, and he was in the cavalry, French cavalry. Ever such a nice chap. Well, him and I started there together, repairing these shoes. Well, now, well, that job came quite easy to me, because what we had to do was to fit new soles or repair the heels on these jack boots. Well, that was simple for me, because being used to woodwork, it was only just knocking in panel pins. Well, now also in that room there was two girls from the village. Well, they worked on a machine there for repairing the tops where they was broken through or anything, they'd done the sewing for it. And also there was a young officer's widow, and she was in charge of the whole lot of us. She used to check it up and issue it out, issue the shoes out to us, inspect them and so forth. Well, after you've done so many, I don't know the number now, but after you'd done so many, you was allowed a farthing each for these shoes, the pairs that you done. Well, now, after a little while, above all things, the boss said he'd like another Englishman there. And who do you think they sent? None other than Yorkie. Well, he started in the middle of the week, wanted to know what his pay was and all such things. I told him, you'll get a farthing a pair, kid, I said. After you've done so many, I said, and that lady, she'll inspect them. So anyway, we settled down. At the end of the week, we queued up for a pay, the extra farthings. Well, there were some Russians in front, and I followed on, and Yorkie next to me, and the boss dished them out with the coppers. And just before he got to me, one of the Russians started arguing with him, and the boss shouted at him. He says, "Stimped, stimped, das ist stimped." In other words, that's correct, see? So Yorkie tapped me on the shoulder. "There you are," he said. "I told you the bugger's skint." I said, "No, no, he don't mean skint." I said, "He means that's correct." But anyway, when Yorkie got to him, Yorkie put his hand out for how much he got to come. But he was behind, he hadn't done enough. Never mind about get extra farthing. Yorkie went off the deep end, because naturally he had the sack that finished him. Well, now this minute, her and I got ever so pally. I'll tell you quite a lot of tales about her later on. And the woman inspector, this officer's young widow, well, she asked me if I'd go down and chop some firewood for her, spare time. I said, yeah. Well, I used to go down there, and I know one day when I come back, old Yorkie said to me, he said, "Kid," he said, "where the hell are you getting to? I saw I've been and chop some wood up for that widow." Oh, he said, "Well," I said, "well, she's cold." Oh, Yorkie said, "Blimey, I'll go down and warm her up. You let me know when she wants any help." I said, "No fear, you don't come on them tricks."